MoneyWeb now on the money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Sitting with Nishlin Govender, he's a Citadel portfolio manager. Shall we appreciate the time today? Big tech, Mag 7, Fangs, call them what we will. They were having a absolutely rip-roaring time. Things started to weaken a bit last year. This year, I've actually decided I'd squeeze at some of them. I mean, they've bounced off the lows, but it really does help us understand that there might be titans of the economy, but they are vulnerable to macroeconomic shocks, trade wars, and regulations.
Yeah, hi Simon, hi to your listeners. It's true, I wrote a piece about them in the midst of the turmoil, so when they were at their lowest point. It's nice to see them bouncing back now. I have to say, in the context of the turmoil, my refrain was, the sell-off seems overdone in the context of how defensive these companies are inside our macroeconomies, as well as given the growth that they have that's sort of idiosyncratic of anything that's happening globally. So if anything, I think it just shows that the market can sometimes be a little bit irrational. Yeah. I'm very respectful of the market, but it can be a little bit irrational in selling things, especially when something seems to have gone up too much in the market's opinion.
And it's that too much. And it's almost, a lot of folks are saying, oh, deja vu to the .com. And I remember the .com. I mean, I was a kid back then. I got caught up in the hype to a degree. This is fundamentally different. I mean, to your point, these are giant businesses. These are, in many cases, you know, think of the likes of the Apples, the Microsofts. They have moats. This isn't a .com where it really was, I don't know, it was smoke and mirrors in many cases.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And I think as humans, we find comfort in comparing what we're experiencing now to something we've experienced in the past. And when it comes to tech, I think enough of us have been burnt by the dot-com bubble to go, hey, this feels a little bit like the same, but the companies, you're right, are fundamentally different. During the dot-com bubble, we had no profits, let alone revenue at the stage for a number of companies we were buying. And now you've got companies with significant moats, large cash balances on their balance sheet. I mean, they're an important part of our lives, already generating revenue from themes like AI and data centers. So fundamentally different business models today.
That is a fair point. And in many cases, they're actually not just profitable, but in many cases, I mean, they're not even that expensive anymore. I'm thinking NVIDIA. I first looked at it on a 80 PE, and that's a very simplistic PE methodology, but it's now sub 30. I mean, they've in many cases grown into the valuations.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've gotten very used to looking at a PE number and going, you know, it might be too high. But with NVIDIA, the PE has actually gone high. It's the earnings that have come in the denominator to support it. It's very, very true. I think at the peak of this run that we've seen, which was January this year, a couple of them did look expensive. Your Apples, for example, sure. Teslas, NVIDIA to a certain extent. Where we're sitting now, even after the bit of the rally that we've seen since the sort of calm after Liberation Day, companies like Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA are still trading at a discount. I would call NVIDIA fairly valued, but things like Amazon and Microsoft are trading at 10% discounts to their fair value. We've got Meta at a 15% discount of fair value. Apple's fairly valued. It's very rare to find such high-quality companies that are still growing at those kinds of valuations.
And so critically important. I mean, you mentioned Microsoft. Listeners will forgive me for quoting this again. Aside from their Azure, which is the cloud business, my annual subscription for my office has come along for renewal. They're pushing the price up 30%, and I'm going to pay because what else am I going to do?
Funny you say that. That's kind of the refrain I say to people, because when I talk about AI or the data center or the cloud, people often go, well, you're talking about something that I'm never going to use. Mm. But when you make it tangible, you are paying for office every single month. Many corporates, I would call it most corporates in South Africa, are paying subscription revenues. They're now taking on the Azure service to sort of bulletproof their businesses from a cloud perspective. That revenue is real, that revenue is growing, and they definitely have pricing power. We think of the seven, Microsoft's the best positioned, just in terms of their ability to monetize everything related to AI, tech, and data centers inside our lives.
And particularly in AI, they're on sort of both sides. They've got the data centers, they've also got their deal with OpenAI. And stay with AI a second, because there are some challenges coming, perhaps specifically to NVIDIA, who really are at the heart of it. They are kind of, you talk around in the gold rush, you buy the shovel maker, NVIDIA is the chip maker, semiconductors, but they are seeing threat from China.
If you're talking about threat from China, there's a couple of levels because China's got so good at what they do from a number of aspects that there's a national security risk. So we saw restrictions on some of the NVIDIA chips. That's one risk to an investor's portfolio. And we have seen NVIDIA sell off a little bit because of that. The other angle is the DeepSeek angle, where Chinese companies seem to be able to innovate differently. I have to say that one's a little bit of a misnomer, in our opinion at least. There was a lot of money spent to get DeepSeek to where it was. It did require a lot of NVIDIA computing power, which I think just supports the NVIDIA narrative. And they may have done it in an inventive way, but the way the system works in terms of DeepSeek, you do actually still need a lot of computing power. So NVIDIA, from the DeepSeek perspective, I think it actually validates the story rather than hinders it. I think we're more concerned now about the national security risk, where certain countries might ring fence companies and say, listen, you can't do business in certain areas of the world. And that's something we haven't seen for decades. So that's brand new. And that sort of, we're going to call it regulatory risk, I guess, is something that we need to sort of think about in the context of the next few years.
And you make a great point there. I mean, let's take DeepSeek. I mean, sure, I mean, they certainly did some clever stuff. Make no mistake about that. But in essence, if anything, they kind of legitimize artificial intelligence, prove its value, which again, takes us to a degree to NVIDIA, but also takes us back to Microsoft and that Copilot, which they put into all of their Office software. They have got the Azure, and it kind of almost adds an extra tailwind to the giants out there.
Yeah, it's 100% true. Everyone's trying to make AI native to however we're interacting with them. So, I mean, WhatsApp now has an AI chat that's part of your list. If you go onto Twitter or X, there's a Grok link as part of that that you can use quite comfortably. On an Android phone, you can use Gemini quite easily. And Apple's kind of incorporating the same thing now. It's this arms race where everyone wants you to start to be comfortable with their version of AI, that it becomes incorporated and adopted in your life. And all of it seems free for now, for most of us. But there will come a point where they will start to charge some sort of recurring revenue once you've embedded it in their lives. So that's the projection into profit that we see for these companies over the next couple of years.
A last question, a last stock we haven't touched on, Alphabet. They obviously got cloud. They've got a Netflix monster within their stable. And then, of course, they've got Google itself. There's a search engine. Does AI threaten them and search? I use Perplexity. I hardly ever go to Google anymore. Or do they use their AI and manage to come through this okay?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think inside the complex of Google companies, there are some very good businesses. If you think about YouTube, Waymo that sits in other bits, the Android operating system, but they still generate too much of their revenue and profit from search. And you're right, many people are not searching via Google like they used to, so it is a threat. I think Google has been ahead of the curve in AI development, even though they didn't put it out to customers. There are a number of examples online that you can sort of find on that. So I think Google still has the development pedigree that they could come out with some very cool products. If your listeners want to check it out, there's something called Notebook LM, which Google have put out. And you can basically put in any form of media into that and have a podcast created for you. You could have summaries done, minutes done. You can ask questions. So I wouldn't count Google out just yet, but off the six, I'll exclude Tesla from this. Off the six, Google has the biggest threat to its revenue. So it really needs to start working hard to generate that AI revenue and to be ahead of the rest of them.
Yeah, and I will second that Notebook LM, and apparently they're going to be bringing video to it, I think later this month or maybe early June. We'll leave it there. Sushin Govender, Citadel Portfolio Manager, appreciate the time.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.